Let me get a level from you.
We're getting a level from me. Am I turned on?
You are turned on.
Oh, yeah, baby. You know it.
I shouldn't have asked.
I love the junk food.
You know, I took the bait. That's on me.
That was expert level bait. In fact, it was master level bait. It was...
You know, if you're just going to go for the easy jokes, I will appreciate it.
This is Junk Food Cinema.
Hi, this is Dick Miller. You're listening to Junk Food Cinema on Film School Rejects. Who are these guys?
Where are my ninjas at? Oh, that's right. They're listening to Junk Food Cinema right here on FilmSchoolRejects.com.
All of you mall ninjas out there.
Yeah, mall ninjas, my favorite type of ninjas. Welcome.
And this is the mall ninja opus. This is
you to sit back and realize that that is a thing that exists, and we're about to talk about it.
We are about to talk about the mall ninja-iest movie ever fucking made.
That is right. And if you would like to hear us talk about all things from mall ninjas to mall rats to battle trucks, our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema. And what is Junk Food Cinema? It's just the weekly cult and exploitation film cast. So good, it just has to be fattening. So good, all of the mall ninjas come a-running. And you can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. If you really like the show, though, I would highly recommend going to a little place called Patreon. Patreon, which is sort of like our Black Lion Dojo, the place where you can make sure that our empire continues to grow by pitching in a few dollars a month. For as little as four of those dollars a month, you get access to bonus content like our Star Wars Summer of the ninja magic has already started to take effect on me. Damn you, Dudikoff! Summer of 77 Star Wars episode that just published this week, and you can go check it out for, like I said, as little as $4 a month. We have a lot of bonus content like top fives, we have a la modes, we have mailbags, we have all of the bonus content just for you, and we love our patrons, our junkions. Thank you so much. Today, we are rolling through, we are fighting our way through Summer of 87, and I would not consider myself a confrontational guy. So when we sit down to figure out what movies we're going to be talking about for the series, some of them I bring to the table like, oh, these are my favorites. And some of them were instantly built just like a RoboCop and Predator. Fuck, no-brainers. Absolutely. And then there are Cargill's picks. And being that I'm not a confrontational guy, I don't turn away movies like American Ninja 2, The Confrontation.
He has been taught the mystic arts of war.
Sigh.
He has mastered 1,000 years of secrets. He has learned the way of the ninja. Now, a soldier on a suicide mission. They have been sent to paradise.
Excuse me, ma'am. Wow.
To defeat a conspiracy that threatens the entire world.
Who set me up?
I said who?
The lion.
Who's lion?
He's a millionaire. He made his money on drugs. He's doing research.
The super ninja. The ultimate fighting machine.
Like a predatory tiger, will feel no pain.
Miracles.
And know no emotion but hate.
It's ninja against ninja.
Charlie, it's ours!
Together, they must destroy the most powerful criminal empire the world has ever known. He must defeat the most lethal assassin alive. And they must not fail. Michael Dudikoff returns as the American Ninja with Steve James in American Ninja 2, The Confrontation.
Now, you say this, however, we watched this together one day in the very early days. In fact, this brings up a question I was going to ask a little earlier. See, we keep mentioning the Battle Truck episode, but that was one of our very first episodes. Can you actually access that deep into our back catalog? I know most of the places only keep the last 100 episodes.
And
we're over 100 episodes, so there seem to be some episodes that might be lost to the ether.
They might have dropping off. I am a professional. Let me spit all these Dunkaroos out of my mouth real quick and act like a professional. Our back catalog on iTunes, probably has started cutting off everything but the last 100 episodes. So,
which is like our entire first year.
But I will say that I believe Libsyn, if you go to libsyn.com and find us there, I think you can get direct download links for every single one of our shows.
Right on.
I'm pretty sure that they're all still housed there. So if you can find us there, you can find us all over the place there. So you can find all the way back to episode one when we talked about Battle Beyond the Stars.
And one of the very first things we talked about was doing, back when we were first experimenting with a show, we were doing episodes that were, we would talk about the best four or five of a very specific niche.
Right.
And
back in the all or nothing days.
Yeah. And one of the days we talked about was a ninja day where we were going to do a ninja episode. So you and I sat down with, if I recall, a case of beer. And we spent an entire day watching all of the great quotation marks ninja movies of the 80s, most of which you hadn't seen. So it was like, oh dude, we need to watch Ninja 3 Domination, we need to watch American Ninja 2 The Confrontation, and so we blew through all of those, and we had a lot of fun watching this one. The thing about this movie is it is arguably one of the worst movies we're going to talk about this summer.
That's a hell of a disclaimer. I love it.
It's tied with another one we will talk with later, which is also controversial in the fact that it's not a good movie. But the thing is, with both of these movies, we love them.
Yeah.
Like, there is a lot to love about American Ninja 2, The Confrontation, despite the fact it is every 80s trope from the genre thrown together into one movie, put on frappe, and delivered time and again.
It's every trope from every type of 80s movie thrown into a blender and frappe.
It's kind of the most 80s action film we're going to ever talk about. Like, yes, it does not get more of its time than this fucking movie. And it is, like I said, it is the piece de resistance of mall ninja movies.
I don't think you can use terms like piece de resistance when you're talking about American Ninja 2 The Confrontation.
I just did it. But like, the thing is like, this is actually like steals wholeheartedly from two other movies, a series that I hope we talk about one day, that when we're done with Summer of 87, this reminded me that there's a pair of movies we need to do a double feature of for an episode called Kill or Be Killed and Kill and Kill Again.
Oh, yes, of course.
And because those are...
Were those the... I know this. The karate champion guy who thought he could make like an erotic karate movie.
Yeah,
I think that one was Kill and Kill Again, I believe. But I've actually seen Kill or Be Killed with Jason Murphy at one of our 24-hour movie marathons that we used to do.
I actually saw both of those at a double feature screening in the early days of the Draft House, and it was a really, really good time. Those are fun movies. But the thing is the plots of those movies are stolen wholeheartedly, you know, for this movie. Like, this movie really is, by the time this movie came out, like 6, 7, 8 years after those movies, this movie really is that movie all over again, but with Michael Dudikoff. And
I wanted to say Steve James for Kill or Kill Again, but that's actually American Ninja 2. James Ryan is the guy who was in Kill and Kill Again, as well as Kill or Be Killed.
Yeah. And so this movie is fun.
Yeah.
It is just a good old-fashioned time of everything going wrong in the movie, and yet the movie not giving a shit.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And just having fun, and delivers what is a great midnight movie.
It is a fantastic midnight movie. Now, we need to go back a little bit. We need to step in the Wayback Machine. We're in 1987. We need to go back to, is it 1986 or 1985, American Ninja?
American Ninja.
I believe it's 85, I want to say. But the thing is, I started to watch American Ninja 2 for this show and realized I didn't remember a good goddamn thing about American Ninja 1. So I went back and I watched American Ninja, the first movie, which introduces us to Sergeant Joe Armstrong, played by Michael Dudikoff,
who I met when I was a kid at a celebrity tennis event. And
there are so many things hilarious about that sentence you just spoke.
Oh, at the Michael Landon celebrity tennis tournament.
Oh, please keep going.
It was a great...
The absurdity sustains me.
When I was a kid, my mother would save up money all year to buy VIP badges to the Michael Landon celebrity tennis tournament. And it was a cool thing, because what it would be is they would just get a whole bunch of celebrities to come in and play tennis against each other in a tournament.
Right.
And so it was a bunch of people from TV, musicians, you know, exactly the type of stuff you'd think would happen, you know. And it was kind of like what a convention is now, where, you know, they'd go and they'd do the thing as they would do panels here. And then the rest of the time, they just kind of hang out and meet fans. And if you had a VIP badge, you'd be sitting in the VIP tent and you'd meet a bunch of the celebrities there as they'd sit down and have conversations with you. And I met a ton of cool people at that. Like, one of the greatest people I met is I got to have a great conversation with Gladys Knight,
How many of the Pips were there?
There were no Pips.
No Pips.
She was Pip free. It was just Gladys Knight. But one of the people I met there was Michael Dudikoff.
Whose last name, I believe, is Russian for when you cough so hard you shit yourself.
I mean, I also met Gil Gerard there. Gil Gerard tried to pick up my mom. He was like hitting on my mom.
Buck
the
Rogers
whole time.
Tried to pick up your mom?
Yes. And tell me, even as a kid, I thought that was the coolest fucking thing in the world. The one person I met that was a disappointment was Dirk Benedict, who you got
me on that one.
Yeah. Who Dirk Benedict is,
yeah,
the original Starbuck and face from the A-Team.
Oh, the A-Team. Okay.
So when I was a kid, like, Dirk Benedict was like my fucking hero. And I went up to him to meet him, and I went up at the same time as some buxom blonde came up. And so it was literally, he's flirting with her while he's signing my thing, not even looking at me, and just says, "Here you go, kid." And like, just does it like, didn't even make eye contact.
Whose mom was he trying to fuck? That's because apparently that's what the Michael Landon celebrity tennis tournament was just celebrities hitting on moms, which I'm okay with.
That's not true, but Gil Gerard certainly did. So Buck Rogers tried to sleep with my mom, and that was fucking awesome.
If you ever needed a title for your autobiography, I think you just came up with it.
So anyhow, one of the nicer people that I met at the tennis tournament was Michael Dudikoff. And I just I just thought it was fucking, you know, it was fucking American Ninja. Oh my God. So for my entire life, like, I have this kind of touchstone as I met the American Ninja and he was cool.
And we saw that it was good.
See, you said you wanted to go in the Wayback Machine. I went in the way back machine. We're talking like 12-year-old Cargill meeting Michael Dudikoff. So many
things crazy about that. But what I didn't remember about the first American Ninja is how fucking boring it is. It is a very dull movie.
Oh, no. American Ninja 2 is the superior film.
It really is. And it was both of these movies are directed by a guy named Sam Furstenberg. And Sam Furstenberg is to the 80s what Isaac Florentine is now. And Michael Dudikoff was kind of his Scott Atkins. Isaac Florentine's a guy that did Undisputed 2, Undisputed 3, and a lot of movies with Scott Atkins kicking
people.
Who
is fucking awesome.
Scott Atkins is, if they were going to redo American Ninja, which they've kind of already done, it would and did star Scott Atkins. I would direct you to Ninja 2, Shadow of a Tear.
Yes.
Because if you're going to put the word ninja in front of a number, there has to be a colon and a stupid thing after that. So.
A stupid thing? Here's the thing about... American Ninja 2, The Confrontation.
The Confrontation.
Take a drink every time we say The Confrontation.
Shouldn't it be confrontations plural? Because this really is a series of confrontations loosely strung together with a thin plot.
Well, basically what they're doing is they're doing ninja algebra, where they're taking every confrontation within the bracket, the polynomial ninjas, and just factoring it out to a single confrontation.
And yet, the perfect 80s title was right there in their grasp. Like, it was right there. What is ultimately the villain's plot in this movie? There are two of them. One is we want to sell a lot of drugs, and two is we want to make what are called...
Mutant ninjas.
Super ninjas.
Oh, super ninjas.
So tell me, American Ninja 2 Super Ninjas wouldn't actually be the greatest 80s title of all time.
I got like a half chub just hearing that title.
Like, why wasn't it called American Ninja 2 Super Ninjas? I don't know. Probably because they watched it and said, wow, these super ninjas aren't really that super. In fact, we made a bunch of super ninjas, and then just to prove a point, we took one of our other super ninjas and let him kill all the other super ninjas.
That's a good segue, because I found out something significant about myself while watching this. I have lupus. No, it's that I love ninjas, and I always have. You mentioned the fact that, yes, a couple of years ago we got into the 80s ninjas, but I remember growing up, like, I was obsessed with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
Not the toys, the cartoon, and then, of course, the first and second movies were huge to me. And that led to a very small, a very brief, like a fart in the wind of a ninja resurgence in the early 90s, because I also got into the movie Surf Ninjas, and I watched at least the first three ninjas movies. So, and the thing about those movies is that they don't actually feature fucking ninjas.
No, no, the word ninja starts getting really loosely used towards the end of the 80s, and no looser than here, where we have a ninja who never does anything ninja-like, and then we have a series of other ninjas who do nothing ninja-like. Like, when you think of ninjas, you think of guys skulking around in the dark in black suits, throwing smoke bombs, and mysteriously appearing or disappearing, yes, as if they had magical powers. The whole thing of the history of the ninja is that people believe they did have magical powers. And you know, the folklore surrounding them led to a lot of, you know, tropes that were heavily appropriated by seedy filmmakers in the 80s, like Golan and Globus.
How dare you, sir? How dare you disparage the good... I can't even say it
you
with
can't
a
even
face.
Say it with a straight face.
That's what Cannon did so well, and we talked about this in Over the Top, is they kind of controlled the market, because what they would do, they would trick American audiences into believing there were these fads. And then it would become a fad, and then Canon would make the movies to capitalize on... They created the demand and the supply.
Yeah.
It's incredible, because nobody gave a shit in this country about ninjas until Canon started making ninja movies. And Canon started making ninja movies directed by Sam Furstenberg. So he really is sort of like patient zero for the ninja movie epidemic.
Except... the entire movie, except for like one sequence, is shot during the day, and it's ninjas walking around in black suits in broad fucking daylight.
That's the biggest fucking trope of ninja movies.
And they're inept ninjas. They're inept ninjas.
Here's my problem. Even though I was just talking about all these movies I loved as a kid, I don't think it makes any fucking sense. You're talking about the history of ninjas. Tell me why it makes sense that any hero is a ninja ever. Ninjas are disgraced fucking samurai who have basically become assassins. Like, they're not good guys. Ninjas are not supposed to be fucking heroes. But every ninja movie you've ever seen and I've ever seen, ninjas are the hero. The hero is described as a ninja. A ninja turtle, a three ninja, a fucking surf ninja, an American ninja. The ninjas should only be the bad guys.
Well, you would think, but then that what you'd have to apply that to Ronin movies. And one of the greatest action movies of all time is about a bunch of Ronin, you know, because Ronin are disgraced samurai.
But at least in Ronin, they're anti-heroes. They're bad guys. It makes fucking sense in that movie. And so what I'm getting at is what you will never see in any of these movies is any of the heroes wearing a mask or dressed in black. So since the heroes aren't in masks and they're not dressed in black.
Except Dudikov does do that here.
Okay. But for most of the movie, he's definitely not in a
fucking gi. He's really not. He spends most of the movie in his military gear of some kind or a leather jacket.
Yes, because he's the American James Dean of ninjas. And that's what, but see, that's why I'm arguing I think it makes sense that these movies take place during the day, because the heroes aren't really ninjas.
No.
The ninjas that are bad guys.
They're martial artists who we call ninjas. Although, this movie, how delightfully terrible is this movie? Michael Dudikoff is referred to at least three times in the movie as the American Ninja, where people are like, we must get the American Ninja. It's like, how many times can you fit the title of the movie into the movie? You know, it's delightful.
Even Surf Ninjas didn't stoop to that level. I just want to point out, at no point does anyone in the movie Surf Ninjas say the word.
I love that we're probably the one podcast where you will hear favorably referring to Surf Ninjas.
If we're really breaking it down component by component, you got to give the win in this column to Surf Ninjas. It won't happen again, but credit where credit is due.
Yeah. No, this movie, I love how delightfully inept all of these ninja are.
But that's the thing, is you don't... What I love about ninjas in general is that they're the ultimate henchman throng, because they're faceless. They've all got these masks on, and although
You can fill them with stuntmen.
You can fill them with stuntmen. It's perfect. And although they have the facade of being formidable because of all the martial arts training, like you said, they're totally fucking inept. So you don't watch a ninja movie to see ninjas be good at fighting. You watch a ninja movie to watch bad ninjas die horribly, and that is something that this movie delivers on.
Oh my god, the scene in which one of the when they're driving away in the truck and the ninja yes. throws a grappling hook and then is dragged for several miles while trying to crawl up, and you're supposed to admire, wow, look at the determination on this ninja, and yet at the same time it's like, dude, you're gonna drive up onto a truck, and then the ninja driving the truck is so bad that he doesn't think, you know, I should slam on the brakes because we're driving 50 miles an hour and send him flying. No, we're all going to jump out of the truck so this can drive through some barrels and then spontaneously explode.
He gets slammed into that building, and then what follows is what I can only describe as a John Matrix-sized explosion. I don't know what the fuck they were keeping in that shack that they hit on the beach, but it goes up in an inferno.
And all those plastic bottles are clearly filled with gas.
Yeah, apparently.
And they just all blow the fuck up for a nice big cheap explosion.
And I love that you're right. He's being dragged. And I think, like, don't think of it in terms of, like, T-1000, like, holding onto the back of the car. It's more like Aunt Edna's dog from Vacation being dragged behind the car. I mean, it's not glamorous, but you have all different types of weaponry being used to kill these ninjas. At least four times in this film, some ninja throws something at Dudikoff. He catches it and throws it back at them. Four times, I believe I counted in this movie. Throwing stars, darts, it didn't matter. Anything they threw at him, he was just going to catch like he was goddamn Miyagi and throw back at them. So we watch... It delivers on the fact that, yes, all we really wanted to see is these ninjas get murdered.
And he's supposed to have magic ninja powers. We're told that
this movie 70
minutes into the of a 90-minute movie, we're told that he also has magical powers that he can call on. And the only time which he then never uses except to go to fart smoke at one point where you're just like, you have magic. And there's a puff of smoke, and then we don't see any magic. Except he does, I guess he's magical in that he can cut people with a sword without and kill them without actually cutting their clothing. So I guess that is a magical power of continuity.
They rented all those costumes and had to return them. I mean, if you're really talking about Golan and Globus, they rented those fucking costumes and they had to return them the next day and they wanted their deposit back.
Or they only had, because you only see ninjas appear like five at a time, except during one big costume sequence.
Yeah.
So it's probably the same five ninjas over and over again.
It's like the cardboard cutouts in the final scene of Star Wars.
Yes.
Like just packing the room with them.
Yeah, just packing the room. But the one thing that you could attribute to his ninja magic is they shoot with a poisoned blow dart and he blocks it with his hand.
He's fine.
He's cool.
You know what it was? They're too good. They're chefs. They're not only ninjas, but chefs, and they're too good. So when they cut up that blowfish to make the poison, they actually got the part that you can eat, and that's what they tried to make the poison out of. So,
clearly. So
yeah, they fucked up.
So needless to say, this movie
by the way, never been our motto, needless to say. We will say everything.
Yeah. Needless to say, this is a delightfully terrible movie that honestly is carried by the charisma of Dudikoff and...
Which is so weird to say, but so true.
And Steve James. Because Steve James is really, let's be honest here, the reason to watch this fucking movie. Because Steve James knows exactly what kind of fucking movie he's in. Yeah. And Steve James delivers on everything. He is a one-line spitting machine.
Yeah.
Like, he's spitting one-liners one after another in the fight. Like, he's giving every guy he beats the shit out of a one-liner. And the thing is watching this, you can tell that they know they're trying to make something funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just that you're supposed to laugh at the dialogue. There's a scene where, like, eight guys jump on Steve James all at once and are beating on him, and he does the big strong guy trick and throws them all off.
And what do you hear?
You hear the sound effect of a bowling strike.
Yeah.
Like, it is just like, okay, yeah, this movie knows exactly what it's fucking making and delivers on that. It's as if Golan and Globus wanted them to make a serious ninja movie, and they were like, fuck no, we're gonna be silly. In fact, Steve James gets the series' best moment in this movie, in which he's fighting a guy outside, beating the crap out of him, grabs him by the arm, breaks his neck, and then the guy looks up again and he just goes, stay down!
Yeah.
And the guy dies.
Yeah.
And it's like he has the magic power to tell someone to fucking die.
He has the magic power to tell someone who should already be dead to stay down. I feel like that was an onset like, no, you're not supposed to get up again. You know, it's a Johnny Cage moment where it's like, this is where you fall and you're supposed to stay down.
But that moment's fucking hilarious. My favorite. Every time I think about any American Ninja movie, I think of that moment with Steve James killing that guy and then the guy trying to get back up. Another product, something you see more in the original American Ninja than you see in American Ninja 2. And one of the things I think is hilarious about the series is that this is the series where a single kick to the head will kill anybody.
Oh, of course.
Like a kick or a punch to the chest will can kill someone just because, well, he's an American ninja and he possesses magic. So,
well,
of course.
Yeah. It's the golden gun in GoldenEye, like one shot and it's over. In the game GoldenEye. I know the golden gun was actually in the Man with the Golden Gun movie. Don't sheed your fucking tweets.
They knew what they were. Our audience knows which GoldenEye you were talking about. That's the one good. Where you take odd job.
Yes. Yeah.
If just, you're an asshole.
Chop. The whole way.
Jason Murphy has never forgiven me for that.
Forgiven my little brother for that.
We played GoldenEye and I just picked odd job and he gave me the dirtiest look I have ever seen.
You are the internet's little brother, Cargill.
He's
congratulations.
Like, fucking Cargill, no odd job. That's the rules. No one gets odd job.
But speaking of the magic in this movie, one other thing somebody actually tweeted at us today and mentioned, and I actually did notice in the movie, he does have another magical power, Michael Dudikoff. He has the magical power to summon his ninja robes or his ninja gi and put it on without actually putting it on. So technically, his ninja magic makes him a Power Ranger, because what he did is it's Morphin Time and then became a ninja. So Michael Dudikoff might
and
be
Morphin
a
Time
fucking Power Ranger.
And Morphin Time involves a flashback to the first movie.
Yes, it does. You know what? I forgot, just like Joe Armstrong forgot about his past. I forgot that that was part of that first movie, too. I really want to buy Steve James all the consolation beers imaginable for all the times he was in a producer's office waiting for an audition and he looks up and Fred the Hammer Williamson came out of the office and he just went, oh, fuck, and realized
the
he wasn't getting that
it.
Job.
You know what? I like Steve James more than I like
Whoa!
The Hammer. And that's saying a lot. Like,
Whoa!
You know I love the Hammer.
Hot take.
But the thing is the thing with Steve James in these movies in particular is he always seems to be having fun. Like, you see, and that lets you have fun with the movie, because this is, like I said, this is not a good movie, but there's a reason to watch it and a reason to enjoy it. And usually it should not be digested alone. It should be digested with friends and beers.
Yes.
But the movie lets you have a good time.
Oh, for sure.
And he is the key to that, because Dudikoff isn't fun. Dudikoff.
No. He is, you know who Dudikoff is? And it struck me watching this. Dudikoff is Ryan Gosling before Ryan Gosling. All he does is he stands there, he broods, he doesn't say much. He's just, and then like when the fighting starts, he's good in a fight, but he doesn't say hardly anything in these movies.
But he does, but you don't dislike him either. It's not a weakness. It's just
who
Joe Armstrong is.
Right. No, I'm agreeing with you though. Like, that's why Steve James is in these movies, because Steve James is the fun one.
Yeah. And so much that he kicks some ass. He's like, let's do that again. Bring on some more. I want to kick some more ass.
Yeah.
And it's fun because it's like, I'm watching this movie to watch guys get fucking thrown around. And damn it, if this guy isn't having the best time in the world doing it. And he's charming. He's charismatic. When he look like, there's a woman who's there clearly with her husband, and she just walks by with her husband and it hands the number like right in front of him, like, call me.
Yeah.
And you're like, of course she would, because he's fucking Steve James.
He's Steve James, for sure.
And it is, he's the heart and soul of the fun of these movies. And the thing is he's not really given much to work with, but damn it, does he get every ounce out of it he can.
He really does. And honestly, I never knew until this moment how much I wanted to see Michael Dudikoff in La La Land. Like, now that we've made the Gosling comparison.
I don't know that I want to see that.
I would watch that today. Right this moment today would I watch that, for sure.
Ninja Land.
Oh my God, Ninja Land.
Why is there not a movie called Ninja Land?
Why is there not a theme park called Ninja Land that we can go to right now?
That you can sneak around.
No, it looks like nobody's
that's the
there.
Thing
it
is,
looks like nobody's there.
And there's, but yeah, it looks like nobody's there. And there is no front gate. You have to sneak in. Ooh, and that's
there
the
is a front
cost
gate.
Of admission.
It's locked. And so you have to figure out a way to get in. And the only people who are there that you see are the guards that actually patrol Ninja Land. And you have to sneak past them. And so, like, all the stuff in the gift shops just starts disappearing. All the food at the concession stands just starts disappearing. Can we make this a thing? Guys, if you are an investor with a lot of money and not a lot of sense, get at us at Junk Food Cinema on Twitter. We will make this happen.
We will make Ninja Land a thing.
Ninja Land needs to be a thing.
And that way, nobody can ever say, attendance isn't great at the theme park. It's like, no, they're all ninjas.
Yeah, no, everyone's here. Oh, my God. Oh my God, yes.
So American Ninja 2, the confrontations, plural.
The confrontations, plural. A movie we have not described the plot of yet because I won't say there isn't a plot. There's a lot of plot here and none of it makes any goddamn sense.
I disagree. I think it does make sense. I think it's just so cliche that it just doesn't feel like, no, this is the plot. Like, we're going to tell you about the plot and you're like, oh my God, that is literally every other movie like this.
I want to take you now to what I believe is the totally accurate reenactment of how this movie was written. Okay, welcome to the first and probably last performance of our improv troupe, American Grinja. What we're going to need from the audience is a suggestion for an occupation, a location, and something you would steal. Yes, you, the inebriated-looking gentleman in the Hawaiian shirt in the back row.
Yeah, how about a ninja in the Caribbean?
We'll run with that. And what's being stolen?
Fuck it, Marines, I don't know.
Okay, let's work with that.
It's a Mad Libs movie.
It's a fucking Mad Lib. Like, the opening of the movie, they're stealing Marines. They're kidnapping Marines.
And why are they kidnapping Marines?
We don't know.
Because the evil drug dealer, because it's the 80s.
Yes.
The evil drug dealer is...
Well, produced by Nancy Reagan.
Yeah. He has kidnapped a scientist who is making him super ninjas so that no other cartel can fight them appropriately.
Correct.
Like, not we're buying more guns or hiring more men. We're building super ninjas to protect us from other cartels.
Which it sounds like a level you have to play in Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon, where it's like you have to go up against an army of like genetically enhanced super ninjas. That absurd, folks.
Yes, and so then they give us a demonstration of the super ninjas, and they show us this whole room of super ninjas, and then they have one of their super ninjas, the evil, final boss, fight and kill a whole bunch of them just to show how badass our final boss is, so that when Michael Dudikoff finally has a weak-ass fight against him, you will end up being like, oh, he's tough. Of course, we've got to see that guy fight Michael Dudikoff, the American Ninja.
Did we mention he's the American Ninja? Take a goddamn
Because break. You know what? The movie sure as fuck mentions it over and over again. Get me the American Ninja.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the island, they're in the, is it St. Thomas? They're in a small Caribbean island that's run by apparently Deep Roy dressed as Idi Amin. I'm not sure what's going on.
It's
with
kind
him.
Of, that's kind of what it is.
He looks like a slightly taller Deep Roy, only slightly taller Deep Roy. But yeah, so he's collaborating with this guy who's called the White Lion?
The Lion.
Or just the Lion. He's Leo the Lion Burke. The guy's name is Leo. How did we not? Come on. His name is Leo. Let's figure this shit out. So you've got kind of this weird... You've got, like, vacation gone wrong, because there's this whole scene where, like, they're trying to solve the mystery of where these Marines are going, and they're let out on a boat trip with Private Fuckwits. I don't remember what his Taylor, I believe his name is, who is clearly the collaborator, and he keeps leading them to this bar. And then in this bar, which looks a lot like any given Margaritaville you've ever been in, the Marines get jumped and kidnapped, and that's kind of we're solving that mystery through most of this movie when we're not like by the way, the commanding officer on this island at the embassy, because apparently all these Marines are at the embassy, is Wild Bill is his nickname, and I read this in the trivia, apparently he's made up to look like the G.I. Joe character Wild Bill. So there's a fucking G.I. Joe in this movie, and there's mutant ninjas and regular ninjas.
This
and
movie
American
was made
ninjas.
For me when I was 12 years old.
It was made by you when you were 12 years old.
I wish I could take credit for that. I wish I could. This is my first script, American Ninja 2, The Confrontation.
By the way, I read ahead a little bit. I know you're not supposed to do that because your teacher gets mad at you. But I read ahead to the plot of American Ninja 3.
American Ninja 3, Blood Hunt.
Oh, no.
American Ninja 3 is where Steve James is still in it, but Dudikoff exits. And the bad guy in that movie is the fucking robot from Star Crash. And I was like, okay, I kind of need to watch this.
Oh, this, yeah, no, these movies took a hard, hard drop off.
Oh, but
off.
Don't you worry. Dudikoff comes back for American Ninja 4.
American Ninja 4, The Annihilation.
I'm going to say that again. American Ninja 4, The Annihilation. of the franchise? Question mark.
Not question really mark.
Sure. This movie, apparently, one of the big problems with this movie is that while the first one in '85 was a big hit for Golden Globus for Canon Films, because we'll talk about Canon Films all day. By the time this one came out, they were already in so much financial trouble that they had to hack and slash the budget to where there was almost nothing to work with. And that's really impressive because the end of this movie at the... I feel like I'm describing a James Bond movie. At the like island compound full of ninjas is actually pretty impressive. Like, they've got a lot of... There's a lot put into the set. There's all these guys in clearly rented costumes we've established. And they're just all kicking each other's asses for like the entire third act of the movie.
I you know what? I love that confrontation because they're like, all right, guys.
Wait, are you trying to activate sleeper cells? Why do you keep saying it like that?
Homebound. Winter.
Shit. No, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't activate any
train.
American winter soldiers. No.
Yeah, no, that confrontation. They start off going, all right, nobody fire until we're fired upon. And then they show up and they go, holy shit, they got fences and towers and everything. Fuck it, let's throw grenades. Oh, yeah. So it's like, well, we didn't shoot first. We just threw grenades at them and they shot back. Well, so sure. Clearly, sure. The rules of engagement have been kept. They just fucking like, oh my God, I didn't know they had towers and fences. Let's go, guys.
We did not plan for towers or fences, our only natural enemies.
But they're actual Marines on a Marine mission. But they're like, you know what? It's not sanctioned, so let's not wear our uniforms. So we'll just dress in street clothes for our big raid on the evil island. And it just gets sillier from there.
Steve James and Michael Dudikoff, they're in the Air Force.
No, they're Army Rangers.
That's right. Because the beginning of this movie, they say Army Rangers as much as the beginning of Con Air, which is like, the Army Rangers. Did we mention Army Rangers? They're super badass. They're so badass that apparently they hate wearing Marine uniforms.
But it seems like one of those things where it's like, you know, they've got the Army Rangers there because they're sent on a special mission to figure out where these disappearing Marines are. They don't assume that they're AWOL. They just know that they're being kidnapped, clearly. So they send Army Rangers because the Marines need the Rangers for some reason.
Because you got to get all the G.I. Joes involved.
But so here's that point of contention in storytelling
that
where it's like...
Confrontation.
You made it a Marine base because... Army bases typically aren't on these islands. They usually have Marines that do this stuff. So you wanted to stick to reality there.
And that was it.
And that was the continuity thing you wanted to make sure you stuck with. Things like sword cuts and other plot details, that doesn't matter, but they're going to help out the Marines because, well, fucking Marines. It's just, I don't get it, but fuck it. Like, and that is, that really, this should have been called American Ninja 2, fuck it. Like, if you're not going to call it Super Ninjas, American Ninja 2, fuck it, is what this should be called. Because it just, it's like, fuck it.
American Ninja 2, fuck it.
You know, like, our ninjas don't go out in dark, they don't use smoke bombs, they very rarely have ninja stars, they've got swords on their back, but they never use them because they could actually be used to kill our heroes, and we don't want that. So... Like, they just, it's the ninjas are props for Michael Dudikoff and Steve James to kick the fuck around.
Sure.
And it is delightful. Yeah. Like, the fights are fun. Like, the fights never get boring. They're not particularly well structured in terms of, like, the choreography. It's, considering this is the 80s, you look at what Hong Kong was doing in the 70s, and it seems shoddy. But... You know, they are American ninjas, so, you know, it's not like...
American Ninja 2, El Confrontacion.
Yeah, it is not like you are expecting, you know, really, you know, Shaw Brothers level of fighting here from Golan and Globus. But it is, the thing is that the fights are fun, and they're cool, and a lot of them have comedy slipped into them that's really goofy. Yeah. And it's fun, you know, it just is a good, these fights are a good time. time and you're invested in them enough, because the thing about using tropes like this is tropes like this are used because they're effective. It's a storyline. It's like, all right, I'm here. It's a storyline simple enough and stolen enough that you can understand it on six or seven beers. So if you nod off for a few minutes and come back, you know what the fuck's going on.
There's actually a warning label on the VHS that's like, do not consume while sober, which is one of the few things in life that says it encourages you to drink beer as much.
There are weird moments in this film, like the moment.
Name 24.
I will name one that is the most inexplicable in the film, where Michael Dudikoff is hiding in the wheel well, you know, in the car, you know, in the footrest of the car, and doesn't want anyone to know he's there. And you're like, well, why didn't you just drop him off like a block back? Like, this is not...
Because then there's no opportunity for comedy, Cargill.
And it's the weirdest comic moment where everyone keeps like walking towards the car and they're like trying to keep people from the car because they don't want to... But why don't you want them to know where he is? Like, that's not even explained as to why they can't know that he's there. Like, it's just, shh, I'm a ninja. He doesn't even use his ninja powers
yeah, you know what ninjas-
to vanish in the car. Like, that's the one thing he does, and instead he's just lying in the wheel well going, shh. That's, like, what a ninja power, American ninja.
That's the thing you don't understand about ninjas, clearly, Cargill.
I didn't know I was a ninja. I could do that.
Because what it really is it's not that you don't see ninjas because they're masters of concealment. It's because they've just told everybody else not to tell you that they're there. It's like, they're like surprise party ninjas.
It's like a Jedi mind trick without being much of a mind trick.
Well, yeah. No, I think that goes without saying. And... I know you talked before about you love it when there are accidental pairings between our movies, when we do movies week to week. Not only is this also a part two, like last week's Beverly Hills Cop 2, the music is similar in that we talked about Axel F. feeling like the demo button on a really good keyboard, right? Oh. This music is the demo, like if that's a demo, if Axel F. is the demo music on a Casio, this is the demo button on a Vasio that you bought on a beach from a guy with puka beads out of the trunk of his car, because it is just like synth bongo music that keeps trying to get started but can't, and it's like under everything.
Including the fight scenes.
Yeah, which it really doesn't need at all.
My wife was listening from the other room, and she's like, are you playing a video game? And I said, no. And she's like, I hear people being punched and kicked, and this sounds like video game music, like Nintendo. You don't have something on your PS4? I'm like, no, I'm watching American Ninja 2. And she goes,
oh, that's worse.
Oh, yeah, because she was there with us on Ninja Day, if you recall. She watched the Ninja movies. She watched the Ninja movies with us, and so she's like, oh, that one.
She thought you were playing TNC Surf Designs on NES. Was that the name of that game when it was impossible, where you were like a gorilla trying to surf? Which, by the way, a gorilla trying to surf makes more sense than the fucking plot of American Ninja 2.
The Confrontation.
American Ninja 2 Affrontement, as it would be called in France. I got a million of these. We can do them in every language. Don't worry about it.
Oh, wait, we forgot that it all works out okay, so okay that even though the entire mission is to go and save the scientist from the island and shut down the island, the scientist blows himself and the bad guy up, and the next scene is his daughter having a great happy time because she scored herself a piece of American Ninja.
Yeah, about that. Yeah, she has many moments in this movie where it's like, hey, remember your dad's kidnapped? Do you still care about... No? Okay, well, we'll wait. We'll wait until you care
about
that.
That's her driving motivation. She loves her dad, who almost cured cancer until the evil doctor came and decided he wanted to build super ninjas instead.
Again, co-produced by Nancy Reagan. I dare you to tell me that it wasn't, because it's like, this guy, he could have been curing cancer, except for all the drugs. Wah, wah.
American Ninja. Fuck it.
Why is there not a theme song for this movie? How can you not get, like...
sung by Steve James.
Yeah, or some fart rock band. Get Asia. Asia's not doing anything in 87, right? They could fucking...
I think they were, actually.
They could do the song for this movie.
Oh, come on. Come on. No, there's only one band.
First of all, wait a minute.
There's only one band that would be appropriate for American Ninja 2, The Confrontation.
Dragon Sound?
Dokken.
Of course.
Come on.
Which still sounds like something.
Ninja Warrior.
Dokken.
American Ninja.
I love that song. That band name still trips me out because it sounds like something you do with a very special male friend. But no, I just realized something. Asia, they could have totally gotten Asia. Asian was in Golan and Globus's pocket because they did the fucking song, Winner Takes It All, for Over the Top, but then got
that
replaced.
Same summer.
But then got fucking replaced by Sammy Hagar. So they still had Asia's phone number. They could have like there could have been a song that's like American Ninja Confrontation.
I kind of want to believe that we live in a universe where they actually called them and they're like, not after you fucked us and replaced us with Sammy Hagar.
Nobody fucks over Asia. Who, click.
Who the fuck do you think we are? We're not Van Halen. You don't just replace somebody with fucking Sammy Hagar.
You must not know you're talking to Europe, motherfucker.
Is that like Sammy Hagar's whole career was replacing other people?
I thought that was David Lee Roth's whole career.
No, because David Lee Roth got replaced by Sammy Hagar.
You're shitting me. I thought it was the other way around. I'm
32. Oh, God, I forget how young you are sometimes. David Lee Roth was the lead singer of Van Halen, and then it had a falling out in 84 or 86.
You're asking me?
No. I'm talking to the junkions out there who are going to be like, it was 84 Cargill. It was on the 1984 tour, actually.
Let loose your tweets.
So then they replaced him for that album that you know. So the music that you know of Van Halen, because don't you know the song Jump?
Oh, I love
that's
yeah,
David Lee Roth.
I literally
not
just
Hagar.
Referenced that song today, but I don't know the fucking timeline of when these songs were released, Cargill. I know who sings which songs, but I didn't know when they were released.
But,
and also, I'm just imagining, like, Menachem Golan in his office, like, if we can't get Asia, fucking call Europe. I don't care. They'll get one of them. So here's my... Confrontation with some ninjas. Oh, that would totally work. I would fucking pay money. I would fight all of the ninjas in the world to get Europe to do a theme song for American Ninja 2. What's the subtitle again?
The Confrontation.
Confrontation.
Super Ninjas and Fuck It.
Super Ninjas.
Depending on where you saw it.
American Ninja 2, The Confrontation and Super Ninjas and Fuck It.
Yeah. So that is American Ninja 2. It is amongst the junkiest fucking movies we will ever talk about. Although you do know which film I was referencing that we'll talk about later this summer that I would argue is just as bad as this, but beloved.
I honestly can't remember what we're doing tomorrow.
Masters of the Universe.
Oh, fuck. Oh, okay, summer of 87 was the summer of canon.
It was.
Oh,
this
my
is,
God.
This is where canon had... Essentially, canon had done so well that they were just chunking out movies. It's just how they overextended themselves and how they went bankrupt.
I just realized this is the year they released the two movies that collapsed them, Over the Top and Masters of the Universe, both of which we're covering on the show.
And in the middle of there, American Ninja 2... The Confrontation.
Super Ninjas.
Fuck it.
So my last question to go out on. So if you watch the documentary Electric Boogaloo, all about the canon, about canon films, you'll know that Michael Dudikoff was promised by Golan Globus that he was going to be the next big thing, and he was going to be their golden boy, and they really did love him. They auditioned over 400 actors before they landed on this guy who knew absolutely no martial arts to be the American Ninja. So they fucking loved him on screen. So if canon had stuck around, Cargill, if they hadn't wasted their money on movies like Over the Top and Masters of the Universe that we love, what character do you think Michael Dudikoff would have played that would have really put him over the top and not in Over the Top? Because you know they were buying up a lot of licenses. They did a Superman movie. They did Masters of the Universe. They were trying to do then what Hollywood's doing now, which is just capitalize on any name.
Oh, that's right. They did do Superman 4, didn't they? Which will end up in our special end of the summer worst of 87 episode.
Our Gilligan's Island and the rest episode.
Yes. Yeah, that's that one's already on the docket. There will not be a full episode on Superman 4 because we do not like kicking the shit out of movies unless we really enjoy them, like American Ninja 2, The Confrontation.
Super Ninja.
Super Ninjas, fuck it. yes. So, canon just had a hell of a weird fucking summer, but churned out some stuff that we love amongst the stuff that we hate. I can only imagine that if he stuck around, he might have done what Jean-Claude Van Damme was doing, like started doing
those. He would have been Guile.
He would have. Oh God!
That's not a bad answer, actually.
No, Guile is a perfect example.
Because he's already playing like an Army Ranger.
Yeah, no. Really, the fact that they went to Van Damme instead of Dudikoff kind of pisses me off now. I had never thought about it, But Jesus Christ, he was fucking Guile. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if that's who they based Guile on, because they based characters off, you know, tropes from movies and such.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Cage is actually based on Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah, from Mortal Kombat. Yeah. So I would not be surprised if that's who they originally kind of drew their inspiration of and went in the Johnny Bravo way. Johnny Bravo didn't exist at the time, but yeah, a Michael Dudikoff fucking Guile would have been fucking sweet.
I absolutely know who he would have been had this studio not folded.
I assume, since you asked the question.
If this studio had not folded like clean towels, it definitely would have made a Captain America movie. It would have gotten those rights.
Oh, yeah, and they may not have given it to Pune.
Well, Pune was already in their catalog. He had done movies for them. He did fucking Masters. No, he didn't do Masters of the Universe. I keep making that mistake. But he had done movies for them already.
Yeah.
He came in and like finished a movie that they were making, A Journey to the Center of the Earth, like right as the studio fell apart. So he was already in their Rolodex as well. So he would have still directed the movie, but Michael Dudikoff, it would have been a canon film. Michael Dudikoff would have been Steve Rogers. I guarantee goddamn to you.
He would have made a better Steve Rogers than what we got in
Matt
that movie.
Salinger? I think a guy who's led action movies is probably a better pick than the guy who's the son of a famous writer. End of resume.
A confrontation.
Well, thanks so much for joining. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot something.
I forgot a big something.
Because fuck it. The junk food pairing of this movie is actually sort of autobiographical, so stick with me here. The junk food pairing for this movie is pizza and sushi together. As awkward a pairing of American and Japanese culture as can be gathered on a plate or in a questionable movie franchise. Pizza and sushi is the American Ninja. I am also making this pairing because my very pregnant fiance actually ate this exact meal while I was watching American Ninja 2, The Confrontation, Mutant Ninjas, Super Ninjas, fuck it. And it made her very sick.
I'm gonna take it a step further, because that...
Further than pizza and sushi.
Sushi pizza is actually a thing in Japan.
Shut the fuck up.
But I would add pineapple.
Oh, because you're...
Because it's the Caribbean,
asshole.
And like nothing is more of a crazy fucking mishmash of things than sushi pizza with pineapple, which is this fucking movie.
Yes. No, very, very much so. So however you're going to combine your pizza and your sushi, do it. Drink all of the beer.
All of the beer.
If you're of age, we don't want to get sued. And watch American Ninja 2, The Confrontation.
Fuck it.
Super Ninjas.
The Annihilation.
Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining us. Hope you've enjoyed it. We will be back next week with a little movie called... I'm going to start doing this because we're going to know at least what the next week's film is when we finish. So at the end of every episode, I'm going to start giving you guys your homework. And your homework for next week is a little film called The Untouchables.
The Untouchables.
I'm so excited to talk about The Untouchables. A slightly better movie than American Ninja 2.
Slightly?
The Confrontation.
Slightly.
Super Ninjas.
Slightly.
Fuck it. Cargo, where can people find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on Twitter at Massaworm, MASSAWYRM, or on Facebook, facebook.com/Massaworm.
All right. And you can always find Junk Food Cinema on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and on Facebook, facebook.com/Junk Food Cinema. Go to iTunes, leave those 5-star ratings, give us a review. We want to move up that list and get more people to listen to the insanity, the pizza and sushi of the internet that is Junk Food Cinema. And if you really like the show, I highly recommend going to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. For as little as $4 a month, you get access to all our bonus content. We're constantly updating and doing new things. I actually released a couple weeks ago the official Junk Food Cinema Spotify playlist that is available to all of our patrons, where we constantly go in and update songs from movies that we've done, movies that we want to do, movies we will cover, all of the junkiest, cheesiest, grimiest, most awesomely bad music from all of these movies is out there. So that's just one of the many things we do for patrons.
Oh, and hey, this week I'm on a podcast called Random Movie Night, which is done by Keith Phipps and Mike Ryan. Where they pick a random movie from the 80s, randomly generated numerically, and they ended up on Cannonball Run 2. Ooh. And knowing of my love of Hal Needham, they're like, we have to get Cargill on the episode. They've got some episodes with Jordan Hoffman and Robert Smigel, and I'm on this week talking about the glorious disaster that is Cannonball Run 2. So if you have not had your fix of Cargill this week, please go to Random Movie Night and check out our talk on Cannonball Run 2.
You love him. You Hal Needham. Him. Chris Cargill, Random Movie Night. All right, we'll keep an ear out for that. And until next week, guys, watch The Untouchables, watch the first American Ninja, and then watch the far superior American Ninja 2, The Confrontation. Super Ninjas.
Fuck it.
Go Ninja, go Ninja, go! Go Ninja, go Ninja!